Minnesota Vikings fans, welcome back to the Purple People Eaters podcast. He's Aaron, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss what happened yesterday afternoon to our beloved Vikings. Although, you know, if this keeps happening, the beloved part is dwindling. My goodness gracious, what a mess. What a mess. We were just talking off air, like, hey, you know, if we weren't Vikings fans, these last two games were just phenomenal to watch. But they weren't phenomenal in the end. A missed kick, 37 yards, even though he hit two long ones, hit one last week. Yeah, we know the routine. Anybody that had 100% faith in that, you know, you're just a positive person, I guess. And, I in some ways I go, are you serious? In other ways I wonder, man, I thought I was positive. I should maybe turn my best, into it and really, really lean into being more positive or something like that. But that was a horrible way to lose the game after we came back. And you know, it was a back and forth, I think 7 or 8 lead changes. It was a really fun game. We'll get into it. It wasn't all negative, obviously, with the kicks. I mean, Hunter just exploded. The O-line played great. Cousins and Cook had themselves a day. You know, obviously some big plays on both sides of the ball, but the defense, that's got to shore up some stuff. Breland was doing some Breland things. I mean, the third down, you know, offensively was a little issue. So there's a variety of stuff that we're going to discuss, debate, banter about on this here podcast. Of course, we do. Speaking of positivity, if you've listened to this podcast, you know we end with the Minnesota Gopher football segment, and that has a lot of positivity to it. Like, I can't even say positivity. But, yeah, we're going to get into this in just a moment. If this is your first time listening to this Vikings podcast here, welcome. It's available in a couple different places. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. You don't have to go to Blog Talk and Ropeadope if you don't want to and download the show there. You can find the platform on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, a variety of other places. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com? And one more thing, we also have the Living in Loserville page on Spreaker, okay? Once in a while, you can get this show there early. Just a heads up with that. Aaron set this page up last year. It's called Living in Loserville on Spreaker. Of course, it's Vikes and, you know, going to be Gophers and then Timberwolves and Gophers later, you know, next year, I should say, not this year, in January. Well, hopefully, we're going to go deep into January with the show, if you know what I mean, for the Vikes. But anyway, I digress. He also has some personal podcasts over there that you might be into. That's Living in Loserville Spreaker. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called DirecTV Stream. The prices start as low as $69.99. It's the best live TV and on demand. All your apps in one place, access to over 6,000 apps, no annual contract, no hidden fees. If you upgrade to the Choice or Ultimate package, that's 3 months free of HBO Max. Plus, you get to enjoy regional sports networks with no available additional fees, I should say. There was a little issue with that with the Gopher stuff. And if you go up to the Premier package, that's Showtime and HBO already in there. That's DirecTV Stream. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring in Aaron to the fold and let him light the fire to this show. What's going on, man?
The more things change, the more they stay the same. We have a never-ending line of calamity, I would say. I don't really know if you had, like you mentioned, if you had 100% positivity that kick was going to go through, where have you been for the last 5 years? Any rational person in the pit of their stomach knew that there was a very good chance he was going to miss that kick after we were chasing a missed extra point all game. So that was the first annoyance that I had, is like, okay, you know, in the first quarter, maybe early second quarter, you get a touchdown, things are looking good, you miss the extra point. And then that's when the the spiraling starts with Vikings fans, and we're like, okay, when is that going to come back and bite us in the ass? Because you knew it was going to. And then it just goes from there. There's a lot of positivity, like you said. You can pick out really good points in that game, and we went over a few of them. We'll go over them on the show. But at the end of the day, you pay a kicker to make a 37-yard field goal. And I hear a lot of the media and everybody else outside of the Viking organization talking about, well, it's not just one play. It's not. But if you make that kick, all those other things disappear and you win the game. And we're talking about a whole different thing and a whole different mood right now. So I do blame the kicker. I can say his name now, Greg Joseph. I blame him for that kick. Now, it doesn't mean he's not going to make more kicks for us in the future. It doesn't mean he's not going to make more kicks for us in the future. But for this game, with everything the offense did to get you in position, I mean, that's where the blame has to lie. Otherwise, I just think you're rationalizing.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because up until about maybe halfway through the season last year, since we've done this show since 2018, we've been asking this. How many times have we asked for this from the offense in the last 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 2 minutes of games? And they're delivering right now. They delivered last week. They were about to deliver in overtime, I mean, if you think about it. And then obviously they delivered again this week as far as offense. It's just wild, man. I mean, to hit a 54-yarder, like I said, last week at the buzzer. So a lot of people are like, oh, you know, why even put him in that situation? Oh, you mean the situation he was in last week and he hit a 54-yarder? Is that the scenario we're talking about? I mean, he missed the extra point. I get that, but he hits two 52-yarders. Dead center, 37 yards. They got a little rush from his right side. That doesn't matter. He thought it was good when he kicked it. Noticed he looked up. He didn't follow through. And you know, we saw what happened. But let's kind of break down that moment a little bit more since we're here. With 37 seconds left, a lot of folks up here talking about aggression. Why let it, like, get a couple more yards? You know, don't leave it in his hands, all that stuff, right? But when you look at the stats, okay, I heard this in a couple different places. From 30 yards to 37 yards, it's a 90% chance on average he's going to hit that. That's just league average. Now, obviously, you know, the last 6 years with kicking, we can't really say we're league average. But I'd like to see those stats in the last minute of the game. I'm sure they're even a little higher. But from 30 to how many yards are you going to pick up? From 30 to 37, it's a 90% chance. What were your thoughts there? Because we heard a lot of the media, a lot of fans saying, why give up there? Of course, there's a possibility of a fumble or a bad snap. But there's also a possibility of having someone in the backfield, something we've seen a lot in the interior, and, you know, knocking them back and moving them to the left. So, I mean, where do you stand on those last 30 some odd seconds and us, you know, not doing anything?
Well, I've heard a lot about it as well, and a lot of this and a lot of that and what ifs and all that stuff that, you know, you and I, we try to stay away from. Look, if you can't, I mean, what are our standards at right now? If you can't confidently put your kicker out there, whether it's 37 seconds left to go, first down, whatever it was, if you can't say we're in field goal range, this is, he says he's comfortable with it, if you can't put him out there and expect him to make a kick, then why is he on your roster? Why is he there? If you can't expect him to do his job, why is he there? Now, yes, you could take another shot. I wouldn't have had a problem with maybe one shot to the end zone. Why not? You know, if Kirk throws it where no one else can get it, but maybe Thielen or Jefferson, give it a shot. I'm fine with that. But, you know, you're going to risk a sack on that, maybe put him back in the 50s so he can make the kick. I don't know. I mean, you're going to maybe run Cook and chance a fumble. He's already nicked up a little bit. There's a lot of things that went into it. I have zero problem, Chris, with him just running the clock down and let's put the kicker on, win the game and go home. I think that's a perfectly logical thing to do considering the way the game had been going up to that point and where you were in the game. If you can't trust the kicker to go out and do his job, you've got bigger problems.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it well, and you know, people just assume you're going to get yards. They're going to have a goal line stance. They're not. They know what you're doing. Like I said, we've seen it plenty of times where, you know, a guy bursts through the line on the interior, and now you're 4 yards back further, and you'd be yelling the next day, why didn't you just do this? You know, it's. Here's a little stat, though, from Ben Gosling, local guy here. This is NFL field goal percentages with 2 minutes left of regulation since 2014, since the old Sims been here. The Vikings are 5-for-10 on those kicks in regulation. They're 2-of-4 in overtime on those kicks, and we know two of them happen in one game, if we remember correctly, back to 2018, that first Green Bay game. We missed two of them in overtime. The number one team, which is not a good look on this one, 33% of those, you know, times they'll get it. That's the Panthers. We're tied with the Rams, Browns, and Vikings. 50% of the time we make those kicks. It just goes back to the kicker, like, what in the hell? Now, the opponents in that same thing are 1-for-1 for overtime. We just saw that. And then 12-of-16 overall. Some kind of interesting stats there. But, yeah, I really think that you just go for it. And here's another one. This just sums up the day, dude. Before, this is Dustin Baker. Before today, teams with a pick six, 3 passing touchdowns, 175 rushing yards were 78-1 going in. Now they're now it's 78-2, and the Cardinals were actually the other team that lost a while back. So, I mean, that sums it up. Another one here, the back-to-back swing, the win probability that's so kind of current in the last couple of years. It's kind of fun to watch the win probability thing. The last 2 weeks in one single play, we've got, like, the Cook fumble. We had 87.1% to win that game when he fumbled or whatever happened. It dropped, obviously, drastic down to 27%. And then 90.1% right there as right before the kick. And then it went down to zero after that, obviously. Pretty freaking crazy swing of emotions for a first freaking 2 weeks, though, of this season. I don't know how many more I could take of this year. We gotta.
So you're saying we're due.
Well, you know.
I mean, if you're into the probabilities, I mean, at some point the worm's going to turn. But look, there's a lot of, you know, woulda, coulda, shouldas at this point. And I have a problem with, you know, you want to focus on special teams in the offseason. That's what Zimmer said. He wants to really, he wasn't happy with the performance last year. So they did a lot of work in camp. And I think on the whole, they've made a lot of great improvements on special teams. So I don't think it was all for naught. But here's the crowning achievement would be a kicker that you can rely on. And we still don't have that. And now we're going on possibly, I want to say, our fourth season, because there was 3 with Bailey and he was sort of inconsistent on extra points and so on. But Kai Forbath was probably our last somewhat consistent kicker. I think in retrospect, we'd be kind of happy to have Forbath back at this point. But where's the attention paid? You did draft Carlson, but then you sent him on his way after you mentioned the kicks in overtime that he missed. Maybe it was a bad decision, but I think I was for it at the time because we don't know who Daniel Carlson was going to be. He looked like a kicker that lost his confidence, and what are you going to do? So I didn't have a problem.
Right? He had like 3 misses in season.
So, and again, another one in hindsight, maybe you hold on to him, you have your patience there with him. Obviously, that in hindsight, that would have been a good choice. But my point here is that Spielman, and I think I've already gone on a rant about this earlier, I think before the season started, but who had confidence in Greg Joseph going into the season? I mean, nope. We're like, who's this guy? You know, and then you draft a rookie for quote unquote competition. And so you basically give him the job and here we sit. Now, like I said, this could be, you know, the kick in the ass he needs and he's going to be good throughout the rest of the season. That's the best case scenario. But the worst case scenario is this gets in his head and he can't shake it. And We're going to find out which way that goes. But really, I think it falls back on kickers. I might be wrong, but a decent kicker is not that expensive relatively, I don't think, as far as cap goes. And you have that extra cap money, and Prater was on the market. There were other guys on the market that you could have maybe had a better name. We had a little more faith in, you know, better numbers, et cetera. But you just, it was an afterthought all offseason. And here we are with Greg Joseph. He must have done something to build a lot of confidence in the front office, because I know with fans, we were all just kind of looking around with question marks going, who?
Yeah. I mean, we thought, I remember you even posed it week one, going into week one. It's like, maybe this random dude is actually what makes the kicker work just randomly. We didn't try hard for it. We didn't go out and draft one, or like you said, pay good money for one. No, we're just a random one. And right now, well, we'll see. We'll give him a little bit more chance. Couple more negatives before we get to the positives. Overall, the offensive line played very well. That is a positive. Like I said, Cook and Cousins went off. You know, good stuff there. Third down, didn't have many third downs early. But I remember them, it was like a 0-5 third down. We finally got one. I think Jefferson got one, and they took his momentum away, but he wasn't down on the ground yet, so I think there was only one. But still, it's only 1-5. So that's something to point to in the second half. Until we got a couple down the stretch, the third down, you know, failing there. And then the flip side, the defense giving up these plays in the passing game, especially that one for 77 yards. Those two items kind of stand out. We talk about third down. We'll go offense, then defense. So those third and ones, right? We had in the second half, we had two third and ones, and you saw what happened when we tried to run on there. A lot of local media were talking about, why didn't we at least just for one of them go for that fourth and one? You got Cook, blah, 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 blah. What's your thoughts, you know, on that third down struggles a little bit in the second half, no doubt? I mean, both teams didn't really move the ball like they did in the first half, obviously. There were some adjustments and whatnot. But what do you think about those fourth and ones? And then also, you know, just so many big plays on the defense, like five of them plus 20.
I would say, first of all, that it's a no for me on going on fourth anything in your own territory. If you're not across the 50, it's just an automatic no for me, unless you have the best offensive lineman and you know it's a virtual 100% thing that you're going to get a yard out of it. Combination of maybe a great lineman, a great back, or something like that, which we don't have except for on the edge with O'Neal. And although the offensive line played well, we're still that interior. If you're going to go up the middle on something like that, you can always throw the ball. The slants were working all day, so you could have tried that. But I think generally, and if I'm not mistaken, Chris, I think we were in the lead for both of those, even though it was 2 points.
For sure, at least 1 point
leads. Yeah. So sure. That also factors in, you know, you want to maybe kick it, go to your defense. Now on the third downs, offensive played pretty good. They got one drive without even a third down, and then they had done pretty well on third down. Defensively, I think the stat was something like they had stops on 2 of 12 or 2 of 13 third down opportunities, or something like that was the stat. Don't quote me on it, but I think it's somewhere around there. So obviously they weren't doing good on what seems to be bread and butter for Zimmer's defense's third down efficiency. And they gave up so many plays. But here's my caveat on that, and you could pick it apart if you want, but this isn't a usual offense. I mean, they're doing misdirection. They've got interesting offensive weapons that are very versatile that make things a little bit more difficult than just your standard statistical things that you should have to do. Murray is, you know, 7 seconds with the ball. You've got Hopkins, who's an amazing receiver. You've got Rondale Moore, who obviously you can't tackle. You've got a lot of weird things, plus the misdirection they were doing and all the other stuff. I don't really think – I think that this is an anomaly game plan that you're going to have. You maybe use a little bit of it next week for Russell, but mostly – and maybe for Lamar later in the season. But these running quarterbacks that have the ability to throw and keep their eyes downfield, that just messes with all the stats. It messes with everything. It makes it very difficult. Now, that's not an excuse. That's just maybe a reason why there's so many options on third down for them, that if you're third and short, you don't have much of a chance of stopping them. So defense could have played better, but I overall just didn't think they played well. I wasn't that disappointed in their performance. They got some turnovers. They stopped the run for the most part. A couple 6 yards on first down, that annoys me. But other than that, I thought they kept them in the game. And, that just all goes down to that last play.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like, to be up 20-7. Did we mention it was supposed to be 21-7? Okay, but 20-7, and then, boom, back-to-back touchdowns, especially that 77-yard play. That's where it had that, well, hold on, we knew being up two touchdowns, well, not technically, but, 20-7. I mean, we were just down 21-7 last week in the third and down 10 in the fourth last week. So you knew that wasn't, going to stay, more than likely. So I'm not really saying that, they let them come back like the game would have been done or whatever. But I didn't like how they just went back-to-back in that broken play. The broadcaster, Talib, actually said, Peter, that was Peterson's fault. And so a lot of the media has just kind of, parroted that. But, I highly doubt that. I think it was – I can't remember if it was Breland or Alexander. I think it was Alexander who – the guy got by him, obviously, more. And he, it looked like he was, sending him to a safety because he had safety help. And Peterson, meanwhile, has Hopkins. So what coverage – we talked about this just a second ago off air. What coverage calls for, okay, no matter what, run away from Hopkins and go cover someone when you have him guard. It doesn't line up. And not only that, but say, well, he was going to take Hopkins because that's what a lot of people said too. The guy, I think I want to say it was Alexander, the guy that kind of pushed. He was getting beat, and he kind of looked like he was just like, all right, I'll leave that to the safety. He went and ran and took the shorter guy to the line of scrimmage. I think it was a tight end. That's the linebacker's guy because they both were heading towards. So you're just going to leave Hopkins? Either way, it was just a messed up play and poor timing and just that momentum. Just, oh, my God, right back at it. Now we're down by one. That did hurt. And just the big plays. It wasn't just that one. There was 5 over 20. And some of that is we know Zimmer. We talked about how it's going to take a little while to gel. And, we didn't get as many live reps in preseason. So a lot of that – and we know it's a little tougher to get his system down. Once you got it, then you know it. But it does take a little bit, especially for the secondary, obviously. So overall,
just to
though,
piggyback.
Go ahead.
Just to piggyback off that, worst case scenario, give the devil his due, was a good play call. You leveraged Peterson between a rock and a hard place. And, he's going to have to make a choice. Do I come up and take care of Hopkins, or do I try to read the quarterback, go back and take care of Moore? And I think he thought priority there would be Hopkins, as I think 99% of the NFL would think that as well. They leveraged him out. It was a good play on their part. And if they designed it that way, you got to give them credit.
Yeah. I think you're right. It was a really tough spot, and it just sucks. It's just one of those plays where you're like, hold on, we gave him just one play, 77 yards. That's it. It wasn't a run or anything. It's just straight up like nobody over there. That was rough. That was rough, I gotta say. But it is what it is. I did like how we went right back out there and a little over a minute got a field goal. Obviously they hit a 62 yarder, but. And as you did mention the 2-point conversion, go for it after that. I hear you. I'm kind of neutral on that one because, if you don't get it, which is obviously percentage wise, it's lower, but then again, we missed an extra point. So, and this is kicking, right? But you're looking at 29-24, then they don't even need a touchdown. They could beat you on 2 field goals. I mean, I don't know. I'm a big component. That's why I say neutral on this one, because I see your point and I see other people talking about it too. I get it, but I'm just big on go for it when you need it. But it is what it is. I mean, frick, extra points. I mean, it was a grinded out game down the stretch. And here's the positives. The O-line bounced way back, not just on penalties either, but just way back in general. Cousins was shining. I mean, those little scrambles, that run, that 20-some-odd run, 32-yard run or whatever, that was key. He made some big-time throws. And to me, that Jefferson touchdown where he got outside, threw it, running left, threw it right, boom, got tagged. Cousins looked damn good, and so did Cook. And I love how we keep trying to at least get it. You know, obviously we ran more with them today because there's holes in the game. We weren't down much ever. You know, it was just down by a little bit, not like last week. So we kept being able to run him more. But both those combined with that line, man, they really, really were on last night.
Yeah, I agree. And on the defensive side, I mean, Hunter had a great game. I think he handled the edge better than I've seen anybody really handle Murray as far as being able to track him down and get him on the ground. Got to see Cameron Dantzler get a little bit of run. Now, don't know what, you know, Breland's situation is as far as his health, but it was good to see him back on the field and maybe out of the doghouse, knock on wood. And thought Pierce played well. We already mentioned Pat Pete. Kendricks was Kendricks. But, you know, what really stood out to me besides a pick six was Nick Vigil, and puts you in a weird situation of, do you really want Barr back? No, that might be Viking heresy, but
let's not rush him. Let's make sure that knee's okay, you know? Yeah, I care about the player is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, Vigil's playing out of his mind, and it's nice to have maybe kind of like similar linebackers as far as their game in Kendricks and Vigil. And I'm not saying he's an all-pro or anything like that, but he plays with intensity, does his job well. Apparently, he's the green dot, so he's communicating the defense. Now, we love Barr, and there's, you know, getting him back, there's, I'm sure there's a ton of things we can do with him now, and maybe Vigil allows him to come off the edge or allows him to do some stuff in the 3-4. So I think it'd just be a bonus to have Barr back. But now, you know, you got that linebacker spot. And then you had the rookie or the second year, the practice squad guy, Blake, what's his name? Number 48 came in and played pretty well, too, as the third linebacker, which makes me wonder what's up with Troy Dye and what's up with Chaz Surratt. But, you know, this guy's a undrafted free agent, came in and didn't make any bad plays, didn't make any good plays, was just kind of there and did his job. And when we needed three linebackers. So I thought there's a lot of bright spots on the defense. Yes, it's gelling now. Everybody's down on it, but I'm telling you, man, the sparks and the flash plays that I see, and it is coming together. And I'm not going to say it's going to be top five, but I think it's going to be a pretty darn good defense, and hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I agree. And it was nice to see Hunter from both edges too, putting pressure, that sack that he had later in the game. Not a lot of people could do that. The Murray overall 7 pressures, 3 sacks, 4 hurries, 7 tackles. I mean, he definitely looked like he was all the way back. A little tentative last week, got the rust off and whatnot, but man, it's nice to see him out there because he is, as we know, he is a monster. There's just no way around it. So obviously 0-2, right? Is not a good look. You know, we know the percentages. The analytics tell you don't go 0-2. It's rough to even try to make the playoffs after an 0-2 start. Now, obviously, if you got into the analytics, maybe getting your ass kicked at 0-2, you know, doesn't bode well as or whatever. You know, there's ways to look at it. Obviously, it's a 17-game season, so you do get an extra game. Also an extra playoff spot now, this is the second year of that. So the stats skew more favorable, but how high is it that that's where we don't know. But 0-2, we're really kind of 0-1 in a 17-game season normally. And like I said, yes, there is that extra spot, but 0-2, man, it is a rough, rough one. You hate to be in this kind of must-win scenario, but, you know, at 0-2, you know, what's your gut telling you right now? I mean, I know your prediction for the total of wins, but is it a death wish now that we're just not going to be able to climb out? We did go 0-3 last year and 1-5 and ended up winning 7 games, but that was last year. You can't depend on doing that again, per se. Is there still hope for a turnaround, or are we hit the death wish on the 0-2?
Yeah. I think there's hope for a turnaround. I think that the offense, considering everybody stays healthy-ish, and the defense, considering everybody plays healthy-ish, are showing signs of improvement. Now, again, it's a tough schedule, but I think we're kind of rising to the level that we need to be throughout the season. Now, it would be nice if you could do that coming out of training camp and use the exhibition games to do that. That's kind of what they're for. But if you're going to come out of the gate slow, you know, you lost a couple really tough games. You know, they're saying, you know, 2 plays away from 2-0. Well, you know, I'd be happy with 1-1 at this point. But, you know, it's considering what we thought we were walking into in Arizona and what we came out with. Yes, a loss is a loss is a loss. You know, don't tweet me. But considering what we thought, what I thought, I guess I shouldn't put it on you. I thought we were, I wouldn't say a blowout, but I thought we'd get beat handily, and we didn't. And everything that I thought was going to go wrong really didn't go wrong, at least to the point where it was unmanageable. And so, yeah, I don't want to change my prediction because I feel like, you know, it's going to be close. But I think there's a run in this team. And you know, please argue with me if you think I'm wrong, but I'm really starting to feel like there's a run in this team. I think it starts in the next couple of games. I'm not going to say we're going to win them or lose them, but I'm saying – at the end of week four, we'll judge and we'll see where we are. But I would hate to be 0-4 at that point. But let's say you another fumble loss, you know, heartbreaking as it would be, but you're in the game, you're close. And then Cleveland is a, you know, another a game you want to get one of these at least. But
you got let's it. Say you you're not gonna go 0-4 and be like, all right, I'm feeling pretty good. You got
yeah, it's just one. True. That's true. You got to get one.
Probably 2 out of 3 at home. You know,
really. Yeah, I mean, that would be great. But I really think there's a run in it. It just when you got to get these things you know, peaking. And like I said, it should have been peaking coming out of camp. But that's not the case. I think best case scenario for this team is you go on a run now. Worst case scenario is, you know, the wheels fall off. But I really think the run is more probable than the wheels falling off.
This is Krauser on Twitter. Good follow. He says 15 games left, not 14. 7 playoffs, not 6. I said that before, but he said the minus 4 point differential, 0-2 this year. If you look at the Colts are minus 15, so it's not even close. 8 home games remaining, 3 in a row coming up, and every team in the North has 1 loss. You know, we'll see what happens tonight, obviously. So, yeah, it's not your normal 0-2 based off of the other stuff we're talking about, but also what we've seen on the field. So I do think that definitely it's a must win, though. I really feel like this is a must win right here against Seattle. And, you know, first of all, at least we got them at home, finally. It's been a while, but it's been 7 straight losses to Seattle, 7 in a row. So this is a must win. But any other items that you want to discuss before we get into previewing this year game that we got Sunday late afternoon slot?
No, I think we did our best to be both positive and negative with what proved to be an entertaining game nonetheless. But yeah, Seattle, is it possible that we lost the last 7 because they were all in Seattle with the weird scheduling that went on? I mean, I'm sure we had a home game in there somewhere, but it just seemed like
one blowout, I think, and that's it. Otherwise, they're all either low scoring or high scoring. They're all tight, it felt like, too.
But I feel like, you know, these guys, to go on the road 2 games to start the season, it's not, you know, preferred, I suppose. You'd like to be home optimally and maybe split them home and away, you know, mediocre wise. But to go on the road for 2 in a row is probably not preferred. And so you come home now, you got a bad taste in your mouth. Games haven't gone the way, but like I said, those are road games. You're coming home to the US Bank Stadium. Hopefully, you get a good crowd turnout and you play well. I mean, you could also jump back into your skin and play like crap at home. It's been a Viking thing to do, but let's not look that way. I think they come out very hungry, and I think they beat the Seattle team. The Seattle team isn't great. They're not horrible, but they're not great. Russell is doing his magic to just get them where they need to be. They do have good players in Metcalf and the little receiver from Kansas State who's making a lot of plays. So you got your problems, you know, ahead of you, but offensive line, they're not great. Defense has really come back to the mean a little bit. So you got a good chance to win here. And like I said, I think you have to win this one. Cleveland's going to be tough. So if you want to get one of these next two, your best bet is Seattle because you're at home and you can do this. And now There's a lot of hope in that. Depending how this team reacts and bounces back, I hope they bounce back in the way that we're accustomed to. Like last year, we'd say, well, we've lost this one. We tend to bounce back. I think you bounce back and you beat Seattle. I think you pretty much run them. I don't think they're going to be able to hang. Now, they're coming off a loss, too, so they could be just as angry, but they're on the road this time. So I think we win. I think it's going to be 32-24, but I think we win. I think offense continues to play well. Kirk gets a win because I think he's really been playing great, and I got to give him credit because I've trashed him in past seasons. If he keeps this up, you'll change my mind about him a lot, but I think we went 32-24, something like that, and end up with a beginning of a home winning streak.
Yeah, they did lose their starting offensive tackle before the season started, not for the whole year, but he's not going to play. Also, Brandon Shell, the other tackle, was forced out of the game when he just started coming back to it, so he could be questionable, maybe not even play. It's tough to say. And then a backup D tackle who is a rotational guy, he's out too. So that's helpful. You know, it's a tight game, you know, as far as the odds go, that's for sure. That Everson Griffin concussion, I just don't know what to think about that. I hope he's doing okay. We are a minus one underdog. They are minor. I think it's 1.5 now. But something's got to give, not in this season, not just in this season, but in general. Something has to give in this 7 in a row. Last year, you know, it came down to just picking up a yard in the games over on the road. Great win, yada, 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 all that stuff. Like we're just talking about what we'll be saying the next week if, you know, we just won. I think we will go over the 55. Like you said, the offensive line's not great, so they're not going to blow us away. We've been playing, whether it's high scoring or low scoring, like I mentioned, right with them the last at least 3 years. I think it's 3 to 4 years. These games have been super tight. So I'm going to go with the Vikings as well. And also, I mean, it's been 2 years, a little less than 2 years, I suppose, but since we've had a home game in general. So that place is already crazy. We win some games we probably shouldn't, or it'd be tougher on the road, obviously, but that or tougher on an environment at home that's not as strong as ours. That place is going to be jumping. They're going to be going out of their minds because they haven't been in that place for so long full. So just that alone, I think, does give us that extra little oomph. Like you said, their defense isn't all that great. So I look for the Vikings to get the W as well. I'm thinking, 31-27, something like that. I think they'll get the job done. And you hear it barely. You kind of hear it a little bit still about Cousins this year, as far as to blame for these last two games. And it's like, you guys are just, come on, dude. Like, I'm willing to meet you halfway. But come on, dude. We ask him to do stuff, and then when he does it, some people just can't give anybody credit because they're just so stuck in their narrative and in this, that, and the other. And you see that amongst not just the fan base. I expect that from, you know, you expect a wide variety of being a homer or just being a hater from the fans. I get that part. But the media sometimes, you're like, really, dude? So they should have just – They should have just gave. It's funny. The same people, Aaron, will be like, "Hey, they should have had more plays at the end of that game." Well, I thought you said Cousins wasn't clutch. So what the hell would you give him the ball for? 36 seconds left. Then you just got done telling me these last couple of years. You know, so it's like, well, which one is it? You know, and some people. Yeah. And I'm really talking media, not the fans, because the fans are gonna.
Well, here's what I'll say.
Stuff. But I do have them winning 31-27 and getting that 1-2, baby.
Quickly, what I'll say before we go to the Gophers about Cousins. Now, Chris, you know I'm very critical of him the last two seasons, almost to an annoyance, I think, to you.
Especially 2019. I just didn't see it early on last year, sure. But 2019, I just didn't see it as much as you.
But I think a lot of that had to do with an ending of half, an ending of of the fourth quarter, like, you know, last year, I think it was against the Titans, where they had a chance to drive and they ended up 3 and out with a couple penalties and blah, blah, blah. And it's just a dud at the end of the game. I haven't seen that this season. There seems to be a resolve in him that I haven't seen. And that's kind of what I was waiting to see. Maybe call it competitiveness of just, you know, okay, well, here we are. Let's get the job done. I see that a little bit more now, knock on wood. I don't want to, you know, Cousins goes through his phases throughout a season. But what I've seen the last two games, I really don't have any complaints about him. A couple bad passes here and there, but every quarterback's got him in different ways. And some great passes. The pass to Osborne was just a 40-yard rope. I mean, he can sling it if you give him time. And the offensive line played so well, Chris, that we spent less than a minute bringing him up. I mean, it was amazing the difference between week one and week two. Even Hill, we were terrified that Hill was going to get, you know, wrecked by Chandler Jones. And, you know, Jones got his a little bit, but, you know, Hill got a penalty.
It was just that holding call late that really stood out. Other than that, he looked good.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not saying that he's an adequate left tackle, but for this game, those guys played incredibly well. The only other penalty was on O'Neal for a false start. So, I mean, I got to give credit to those guys, credit to Kirk. And like I said, my opinion hasn't completely changed, but if you see something, you point it out, Chris. I'm not going to sit and dig my heels in when reality is showing me something different.
And the only pushback I would say is we have asked him to do this a couple things the last couple years, and he has improved as far as the scramble, and not necessarily scrambling, but, you know, just moving a little bit. But there's places to move now. There's places to step up in the pocket. But also, you know, last year he had some pretty damn amazing games. The month of October, for whatever reason, is a really funny thing online where he just goes off for like 4 or 5 games and these crazy numbers or whatever. But also, like, you know, he has, you know, a comeback win, the biggest comeback win we've had in the long, like, a couple decades. At New Orleans, I know it's 2 seasons ago, but we had a tad more solid line then. 2 seasons ago, he has the biggest, since the Niners in 88, the second biggest road win in our history, or since 84. So, I mean, or 88. So to me, it's like he's done a fair amount of what we asked for. But I'd never call him a great quarterback. I've always said he's a very good quarterback with great stats, with a great arm, but you do have to give him time, and that's been our biggest failure. Anything else as far as – well, we both did the predictions, but anything Vikings-oriented? Because I think we should get some more positivity going with this Gopher squad.
Now, you were saying that you really wanted to see the Gophers against Colorado as sort of a gauge to where they were, and I think also Purdue.
And Purdue, yep.
Yeah. And I kind of, you know, said, okay, that's fair. I wasn't too high on them, but at the same time, I was like, this has got some good parts and things are sort of working together. And then Mo goes down and can we get production out of the backfield? And Pot steps in and he gets good production. And now we've got, you know, young guys coming up too with Kai Thomas and Bucky Irving. Guys, okay, well, that's the future, but also give them some carries. So we got kind of that hole taken care of, no pun intended. But then you have, you know, I did not envision 30-0. I thought it'd be a tougher game. I thought that I wouldn't say it'd be a struggle, but I thought, you know, it'd be a longer period, like the first quarter. The first quarter was kind of back and forth with everybody feeling each other out and so on. And then we just took off and went 30-0. I was surprised by that. I wasn't surprised by the win, but I was surprised by that. And if you're going to gauge this as to where this team is, I mean, it's looking really good. You got Bowling Green coming this week for homecoming. And then after that, like you said, you got that second sort of initial test with Purdue. And if you get by that, I feel like Illinois will test you a little bit later. But, I mean, it's positivity is what I'm saying here. And it's at peak point now after you go down and destroy the Buffaloes 30-0.
Yeah, and this is, first of all, college football September. There's a lot of feeling out. What do we got? 1 week you look like crap. The other week you don't. Plus you're dealing with 18 to 20-some-year-olds. So, you know, you have a lot more drop-offs. Look at last week, first quarter, 21-3, looking good. All of a sudden we just shit the bed and it's 21-20. And you're like, how is this happening? And then this team comes out and holds the defense. We talked about the defense, rightfully so, by the way. 63 total yards. Now, obviously, when you get sacked, which there was a variety of them from some guys we've been looking to get, you know, after them, the defensive line stood way out yesterday or Saturday. And, you know, the quarterback, when the quarterback gets sacked, you lose yards. It goes under rushing yards for the quarterback. So that's a little different than the pros. You lose yards, obviously, but it doesn't go underneath your rushing yards. And, I mean, to hold them to negative 19 rushing yards and 63 overall to get a shutout the first time since 2006 against a Power 5 on the road 1977 and the first time a Pac-12 on the road, what year, 1948, that was washed. That club, that Husky club was good that year too, Aaron. 1948, the last Pac-12 opponent on the road that they shut out. So, I mean, well, they'd have that quarterback. But seriously, I mean, wow. Like, I was impressed, and that's kind of what I wanted to see how they'd respond because they played like shit for, like, a quarter and a half in the second half, you know, last time. Gave some explosive plays up to Ohio State. It's looking good, man. That both lines, the offense and defense line, played one of their best games, period. That old line gave him protection. And then we got our boy back, Autumn Bell. And next thing you know, he's making some great catches. And that just opens it up because now the attention goes to him, yada, yada, yada. You mentioned Bucky. I'll mention Wally. I like to say Wale. But this dude, I'm telling you, he was a true freshman hitting people very hard. The secondary is looking good. So, yeah, man, that was a hell of a game. I mean, 2 of 12 on third down. I mean, what defense was that we were seeing? So yeah, Purdue right now still, I you know, it's college football, and some people don't get it. They just watch pros so much they don't understand that this Purdue game might be tough, dude. You just never know. Sure, you go, oh, you know, they lost that guy, but it might be tough. It might be tough. But yeah, man, that was one of the better performances that a Fleck team has had. And I don't want to overrate Buffalo, no doubt. But the reason why, you know, a week before that, they had A&M known for offense. Now, they had a young quarterback because, as we know as Vikings fans, that guy played for like four straight years, Kellen Munn. So they're just a better overall program right now than us. So as far as talent, too, in the SEC. So, I mean, A&M would go – every other year out of our side of the conference if they were in our conference, you know. But that's what – they were up 7-3 for almost the whole game on A&M. And, yes, the number one quarterback got hurt in the game. But still, that shouldn't be like that. But that's what it's like with these youngsters sometimes, just like I mentioned, you know, last week. So that's really what stood out to me. Like, let's see here. I liked what I saw against Ohio State. Both of us did. But, yeah, man, they put it all together.
And I'm glad you mentioned the defense because we were really critical. And like you said, we had a reason to be. And I think what they did is they changed up some athletes. They did some things with the scheme. Wally, I'm glad you brought him up because PJ doesn't play freshmen unless they can play. Mm-hmm. And Wally can play, and so can the Irving kid, although I think he's a redshirt. But I was going to say that they just looked like a well-oiled operation. And I don't know what the preparation was, but it just seemed like they were sharper than Colorado. They were on it more than Colorado. They came out and they just kind of ran through them. And I don't know if that's saying, you know, Colorado played a bad game or they gave up. So you don't want to take too much out of the win, but this is what you want to do when you go on the road. I mean, you want to go on the road and just leave no doubt. And that's what they did. And, you know, I want to say future Purdue, like you said, that's another litmus test, and they're familiar with you. You know them, play them every year. They know your personnel. So it's a different ballgame when you get in conference. And so you're right. That's going to be a test too. And then I think the next one's Illinois, because I think they're going to be, they might not have the record of it, but with Bielema, I think they're going to improve a lot. So it's not going to be like running over the old Illinois team. So, you know, keep your hopes up. But a lot of people are saying 8-1 by the time you hit Iowa. Iowa's ranked fifth right now. I don't want to go that far because you might, you know, you might lay an egg somewhere in there, but hopefully you don't. You do end up 8-1 going to Iowa. Hell of a game that's going to be.
Yeah. And Bucky is a true freshman. He was 2021 class, which that dude, we were wondering, oh, my God, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? You know, oh, we lost Mo, and I love Mo, but all of a sudden we got two backs now. I mean, it was nice.
It makes you wonder.
15 carries, 89 yards on top of what Potts did. Man,
makes you wonder.
That's running backs, baby.
Makes you wonder who else Fleck is hiding back there. Yeah, I know there's some guys when you're recruiting. There's a defensive end named Ja Joyner we haven't seen yet. But he's one of those long, tall dudes.
That Anderson dude that's popped off out of nowhere. All of a sudden you're like, wow, he, you know, through 2 weeks, he was the best defensive lineman, it felt like, or at least on the edge. So, maybe those edge rushers, Aaron, were trying to just go for the quarterback and just go balls out, and they let runs go and all that. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but they played that edge a lot tougher and tighter, and then obviously got home too.
Yeah, and then the kid we were talking about, remember last year, we kept talking about this kid that kept making plays, number 13. Well, I got his name. It's what, Gordon the fourth?
Yeah.
I think he's a linebacker, hybrid safety kind of guy, but every time he's on the field, this guy's making plays. I don't know why we don't see him more often, but every time he's on the field, he's making plays. So it'll be good to see him. But I just think they changed the personnel a little bit, and they kind of shuffled some things around, and it looks good. A shutout's a shutout, and they're rare in any level of football. So, you know, kudos to Gophers, and hopefully, you know, they take care of business. Bowling Green's a little weird offensively and defensively. They run like a 3-3 something defense, so it'll be a little adjustment. But I think, you know, you definitely win this one, and then get ready for Purdue. And like I said, if you get over the Purdue hump, then you start rubbing your hands together and you say, we're rolling.
No doubt about it. I mean, even Nebraska, though, went neck and neck with Oklahoma this last week. But it's still September, so that happens. But, man, it's this year is really open. Alabama even showed some vulnerability last week against Florida, letting them get back into that game. So, if Florida's really young on offense, otherwise they probably would have won that game. But
you got Ohio State with a loss. So,
I mean, it's open. Clemson hasn't looked that good. A lot of these teams, I'm not worried about the top four teams, but you know what I mean? This is going to be an interesting season, no doubt. And let's hope we get a Vikings freaking W, man. We really, really need that W. We need 1-2. We need some positivity. Any last words, sir, before we shut this puppy down?
No, I think it'll be good for the whole state and for all the fandom to have a home game. I think it's about time. So let's hope for a Viking win, like you said, and everybody get to the stadium and make some noise, help them out.
Sounds good. Be back next Monday. Peace.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.